007 reporting for duty.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
Smoke and mirrors, guys. Welcome to the movie factory.
How dare I? How dare you?
Okay, you seem normal.
It doesn't matter what I feel.
I'm Commander-in-Chief.
What if someone really good made a horror picture?
Happy Hunger Games.
That's as good as it's going to get. And it won't ever get that good again.
The movie news.
You stay classy, San Diego.
With Garrett Daly.
Hi, Garrett. How are you?
Afternoon. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. We are making a list and checking it twice this afternoon.
It's the time of year, isn't it, that
yes.
We have to do it. And I suppose in December you will get a lot of those lists that talk about the top movies of the year. And we've, you know, film critics, filmmakers and magazines and the likes coming up with their lists. Sight and Sound have done so. This is the magazine, and filmmaker John Waters as well released their top 10 lists. Interesting sort of selections that are on them, and
yeah.
I suppose listeners can start to do their own now, look back over the year and say, what did I like the most? Sight and Sound, in their top 10, The Act of Killing is at number 1. At number 2, Gravity. Mm. I think that will be there for a lot of people.
So.
Blue is the Warmest Colour.
Another big hit, yeah.
Yeah, The Great Beauty, Frances
yeah.
Ha, A Touch of Sin. So there's the type of ones that are on Sight and Sound's list.
Yeah.
On the top of John Waters' list, interesting one this, Spring Breakers. Is his top 10 movie. Blackfish is in there as well, and of course a Woody Allen movie, Blue Jasmine,
that'll be on my list, I have to
seven.
Say
yeah, so it's interesting. I think we'll see more of these as we go throughout the month, and of course by the time we reach the end we have of course more movies to get.
We'll get those in January,
yeah,
won't we?
The
yeah.
American movies that are released just in time for the Oscar nominations, and I think then
it always helps
can,
us through January, those dark
does,
days are helped
does,
by some good movie
it?
Releases so,
we
yeah.
can then make our lists, I think, of the best movies of the year.
All right, and we're staying with lists. This is one you'd rather not be on, though, yeah?
I think so. Forbes magazine announced what they considered the year's biggest box office duds.
Huh.
So you see, not a list you want to be on. The one at the top of the list, the Julian Assange movie, The Fifth Estate.
Really, with Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yeah. It had a budget of $28 million, but it pulled in a mere $6 million worldwide.
It's a funny one. Everyone thought it was just being made too early in the story.
You
kind
had
of got
the documentary as well, you see,
yeah.
That, you know, was the true telling, and then you have this fiction piece as well.
So but even Benedict Cumberbatch can make a dud, that's saying
and
something.
Only making 21% of its budget back, that's not good.
Yeah.
Sliced Alone, Bullet to the Head came in second.
There you go.
Which is 9 million worldwide after a box office, or after a budget of 25 million. Paranoia as well was third in the list. Looking through, I mean, there was some interesting ones. I mean, you had Russell Crowe and Mark Wahlberg in Broken City.
Yeah.
That only made back 19 million after a 35 million budget.
And there's two big star names, but it just didn't work.
And
yeah.
then, I suppose, big budget films, RIPD, that had a budget of 130 million, but it made just back 78 million.
Cool.
I mean, some of them avoided getting on the list because, I suppose, in America, they didn't do well, but they did well internationally, and that
yes.
sort of saved them from making this list. The likes of The Lone Ranger, which we heard a lot of reports
yes.
about. Good Day to Die Hard as well. Turbo. Those type of movies did well abroad, brought up their numbers, but domestic. In the States, they didn't do as well as they thought.
Okay,
so.
Now Jurassic again.
Jurassic Park, we know that they're going for a fourth one. We know that Colin Trevorrow is directing it. He's quite a secretive guy, and he kind of, when he was denying that he was part of it, he was saying, look, I'm involved in a major franchise. I'm not going to tell you which. Of course, everyone thought it was Star Wars, and then all that came out that
yeah.
JJ was doing it. Anyway, he's taken to Twitter recently to kind of dispel some notions about the upcoming, is it the fourth movie at this stage? Well, first of all, it's not sort of a reboot. It's taking place 20 years after the original.
Okay.
So 2 decades afterwards, and which is quite ironic actually, because that's how long ago it will be that we've had the original.
Oh, okay. That's
when
good,
they
then.
Get into production on this. And there's sort of no word of casting as yet. Chris Pratt has been mentioned as a potential role in it, but he was keen to sort of dispel the myth that it is a reboot of sorts, but
yeah.
not not in the way that people think. Is the story continuing? Just happens to be 20 years later. So they're going into production on that very soon, and I think they've got a sort of 2015 release date in mind for it already.
Keep an eye on it. Now, some smoking issues.
Smoking issues. Well, I suppose we all know, I suppose, about the attitudes to smoking has changed immensely, certainly in this country over the last number of years. Well, in India, there's a film debate raging about this now as well.
In terms of smoking on screen?
Yes, the Indian government recently passed a law declaring all smoking scenes in motion pictures must be accompanied by a little note letting the audience know that it is dangerous. Now, it's not just something that they put at the end. It has to go on the screen right in the middle of the scene. Which has caused major controversy. Woody Allen, in fact, actually was really annoyed about it, that he refused to release Blue Jasmine into theatres. And so an Indian director has actually decided to take this a little bit further. He's challenging it in the Bombay High Court this week, ruling that, you know, it affects the director's aesthetic value on the work. It takes viewers out of the action and that it tramples all over rights to free speech. So, like, India is far from the only nation that's going to sort of going to cut back on this as well. In the States, you know, smoking is actually included as the ratings criteria.
Gosh.
And China doesn't allow any minor characters the freedom to smoke in movies. So there's going to be more and more of this as we go along. So we'll see how that one goes in India. It could set a precedent for
all change, isn't it?
It certainly has.
Now, a lot of chat as well, Garrett, about posthumous awards.
Yeah, and I think there's kind of going to be a little bit of a debate on it. I was taken by a piece that I read in Variety by Tim Gray, who was talking about the attitudes, I suppose, to actors in awards contention following their death.
Yeah, I suppose Heath Ledger's the big example of late.
That's
really,
right. That is right.
And
James Gandolfini is the man that has sparked the interest in this article, because his performance in Enough Said people really liked. And there's a little bit of a debate. He died back in June at the age of 51. So people were quite shocked, obviously, when he passed away so suddenly. But he has earned a supporting actor nomination in the Indie Spirit Awards. That's a promising sign, but it's a different story for Golden Globe or Oscar nominations. As you mentioned, Heath Ledger in 2008 for Dark Knight, Peter Finch in Network in 1976 as well. Is it, I suppose, the thing that he was questioned is, are we kind of swayed by the fact that, you know, the performance is elevated to something else because of the actor passing away? There's only been 8 nominations and 2 winners in 85 years of the Academy Awards in this. So, you know, you've like James Dean in 1955 for East of Eden and things like that. So you can't go and look at too many examples. As for James Gandolfini, well, you know, there's a lot of people like Michael Fassbender, Jared Leto, William Forte, Steve Coogan, all these types of people have been mentioned for the best supporting actor roles. Whether he'll make it or not, but I suppose people tend to think that it might happen. I thought it was an interesting article.
Certainly was. Now, we are very used to seeing at the end of TV or films, no animals have been harmed in the making of this film, but not so with Life of Pi. Is this true?
Well, it's just, it's an article that The Hollywood Reporter did where they investigated this and to see were animals actually harmed in any film production. The one that has caused the controversy, as you said, is Life of Pi. And Ang Lee has been questioned about it, because what happened is there was a leaked email that suggested that the tiger nearly drowned during a scene.
Wow.
And that he was rescued by his animal handler, but that it was just, you know, one of these events that happened and didn't get out. Now, the film went on to get its certificate. So I think the report was kind of suggesting, you know, this safety record, how much should we trust it? And how much do those statistics matter? Poor Ang Lee, I suppose he's been asked about it and he has to respond to it. And he sort of said, look, there was an incident, but the crew worked hard to rescue the tiger and show him a lot of care, giving him 5-star treatment. I think it was, you know, it was just one of those events.
And
I mean, it went on to win, what, 4 Oscars. It did really well at the box office. And they were just questioning, can we believe those titles? You know, sometimes you don't know.
You just don't know.
But yeah, it's a tough one for Ang Lee to have to
answer. It certainly is. Okay, Trailer Watch, what can we check out online?
Well, I remember this movie when it was released in 1987. Paul Verhoeven directed it. Peter Weller starred in it. They've remade it. You can look at the trailer of it. It's set in 2028 in Detroit when Alex Murphy, a loving husband, father and good cop, is critically injured in the line of duty and he is turned into RoboCop.
RoboCop is back.
It looks exactly the same except done for today with the special effects and everything. It looks quite engaging. I did like the original when it came out.
Is it a case of why have they bothered or do you think it's
there is,
right?
But yeah. Actually, I was going to make the point when we talked about Jurassic Park. You have to remember, if it's 20 years old, how many of the audience have seen it?
That's
and
very
that's
true.
Why they do it. And I would question how many of
they were saying the same about Carrie last week, you know?
Yeah, how many of today's cinema-going audience have seen RoboCop and will want to see it on the
it's
big
out
screen.
Again.
So there
All
you go.
All right, we have a lot of movies to get through on the big screen this weekend, starting with Homefront.
Starting with Homefront is based on a screenplay by Sylvester Stallone, Jason Statham, James Franco and Winona Ryder star. This is Franco and Winona Ryder in this clip. It's about a former DEA agent moves his family to a quiet town where he soon tangles with a local meth drug lord, and it's not Breaking Bad.
This means no more small-time jobs, no more sweating middlemen. All we do is cook and get paid.
It's never that easy.
No.
It's just
all you have to do is learn a few lines and go and talk to Danny T's lawyer.
Like hell I
No,
am.
You use them. Coming back all humble. You're not asking for money. You're giving Danny this guy as a gift, as a favor.
Gator, that guy is a pig.
Just trust me. You're gonna give the negotiation of your life.
Yeah, interesting to see Winona Ryder back on the big screen. That's Homefront. Black Nativity also hitting the big screen this weekend.
Starring Forest Whitaker, Angela Bassett and Jennifer Hudson, it's about a streetwise teen from Baltimore who's been raised by a single mother, travels to New York City to spend the Christmas holiday with his estranged relatives, where he embarks on a surprising and inspirational journey. There's also Just a Sign. This is about a brief encounter which proves to be slightly overwhelming for both parties. Getaway stars Ethan Hawke and Selena Gomez. It's about a former race car driver who's pitted against the clock when his wife is kidnapped by a mysterious villain. The big one from Disney is Frozen.
Yeah,
this is it's a big one for the Christmas period, really. It's about a fearless optimist Anna who teams up with Kristoff in an epic journey, and you get all the usual Disney characters, the sidekicks in there as well. That'll be a big one with the kids, Kristen Bell and Josh Gad on voices there. There is part two of the Marseille trilogy, that's Fanny, that's out as well. And Old Boy 2013, Spike Lee directs Josh Brolin and Elizabeth Olsen alongside Samuel L. Jackson in that movie as well. There's a lot of movies out. Daniel Radcliffe and Michael C. Hall star in Kill Your Darlings.
Yeah.
A Murder in 1944 draws together the great poets of the Beat Generation, Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac and William Burroughs. And Nebraska. This is from Alexander Payne, director of Sideways and movies like that. A really, really good director. Bruce Dern, there's a lot of mentions of him now for various different nods for awards. He leads the cast in this movie. An aging father makes the trip from Montana to Nebraska with his estranged son in order to claim $1 million mega sweepstakes marketing prize.
There you go. That's quite a mixture you have for us.
It is in a lot of movies.
Okay, your TV movie recommendation. Where should we go?
Well, we should go to Channel 4 on tomorrow night at 10 p.m. A 16-year-old girl who's raised by her father to be the perfect assassin is dispatched on a mission across Europe. Joe Wright directs. Saoirse Ronan stars. Kate
Saoirse Ronan's great in it.
Yeah, and Eric Bana as well. It is a premiere if you've not seen it, so you'll get it at 10 p.m. as I said, tomorrow night on Channel 4. It is called Hannah.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Garrett.
Thank you.